It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. An Afghan government official says the death toll in a suicide car bombing in a western neighborhood of Kabul has claimed at least 12, wounded 10 others. No one claiming responsibility so far. Also in the news, two Jordanians killed and Israeli wounded by gunfire in a heavily fortified Israeli embassy compound in Jordan's capital. Authorities did not say what triggered the shooting. Incident comes at a time of mounting tensions between Israel and the Muslim world over metal detectors Israel installed at a Jerusalem shrine revered by Muslims and Jews. Michael Fishbach is a Middle East expert at Randolph-Macon College.
The worst-case scenario is that we could be heading toward a third Palestinian intifada, and that's something that disturbs a lot of people on various sides because it inevitably would lead to bloodshed on both sides. There's been a lot of frustration, certainly among Palestinians in recent years, frustration at any number of sources of blame. And something like this, which deals with religion, is just as if it's a third rail. And so that, I think, is what all parties are desperate to try to avoid.
UN Security Council set to meet an emergency session today to discuss the violence that's left 7 people, 3 Israelis, 4 Palestinians dead. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan met with the Kuwaiti leader to discuss ways to end the diplomatic crisis between Qatar and Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Bahrain, which cut ties with Doha, accusing it of supporting extremism, Qatar denying the allegation. Christian militia blaming ambushing UN peacekeepers escorting water trucks, southern Central African Republic town of Bengasi, killing 1 Moroccan, wounding 3 others. This is VOA News. U.S. Congress moving toward adoption of new sanctions against Russia for its interference in the 2016 election. White House spokesperson Sarah Sanders said President Trump will likely sign the measure into law.
The administration is supportive of being tough on Russia, particularly in putting these sanctions in place. The original piece of legislation was poorly written, but we were able to work with the House and Senate, and the administration is happy with the ability to do that and make those changes that were necessary.
Congress seeking to punish Russia for not only its meddling in last year's U.S. election, but also for the 2014 annexation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula. Special U.S. Envoy to Ukraine Kurt Volker says Russia is responsible for the hot war in eastern Ukraine.
This is not a frozen conflict. This is a hot war. And it's an immediate crisis that we all need to address as quickly as possible.
Volker, appointed by the U.S. State Department earlier this month to negotiate an end to more than 3 years of fighting that has killed 10,000. Police in the U.S. city of San Antonio, Texas, say they have found 8 people dead in the back of an extremely hot tractor trailer. A 9th victim died in a hospital hours later. There were 30 survivors, including 2 school-aged children, along with 20 who are in critical condition in a hospital. No word on the nationality of the immigrants. VOA asked Nell Green of the Coalition to Combat Human Trafficking Texas if this was people smuggling or human trafficking.
For legal purposes, if you have paid somebody to get you across the border with the intent that you're going to go to work somewhere, and you get caught on the other side of the border, whether it's in a stash house or a trailer or whatever, at this point, you have been smuggled. And for legal purposes and for charges to be brought against anybody, in order for it to be human trafficking, you've got to be able to prove force, fraud, or coercion. And you can't do that in this case.
San Antonio's fire chief says it likely that many others wouldn't have survived the night in a trailer because of the temperatures reaching 38 degrees Celsius. American Jordan Spieth won golf's British Open over fellow American Matt Kuchar to capture his 3rd major championship. Spieth, who won the Masters and the U.S. Open Championships in 2015, led the British tournament by 3 shots over Kuchar after the 3rd round, both carding scores under 69, 1 under par. Get more news at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Monday, July 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Foreign ministers from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, are gathering today in South Sudan's capital, Juba.
The purpose of this meeting is to follow up from the last IGAD Head of State and Government meeting, in which they decided to set up a revitalization forum. And in the revitalization forum, they have come up with a metrics or an agenda for the revitalization process.
Michael Makui is South Sudan's information minister. A new report by Amnesty International says sexual violence in South Sudan is on a massive scale and that victims have nowhere to turn for help. But the South Sudan government says such a report is useless because it is prepared in a hotel. And campaigning for Angola's August 23rd election began yesterday, Sunday.
The ruling party MPLA issued a statement saying that the party wants, and I quote, a qualified victory in the next general election of 23rd of August.
Mario Alpaval is a veteran Angolan journalist, and Liberians in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area enjoy an early 170th independence celebration. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Foreign ministers of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, and countries involved with brokering peace in South Sudan are gathering today in Juba. IGAD leaders meeting last month in Addis Ababa called for the revitalization of the 2015 South Sudan Peace Accord, saying the agreement is the only political solution for the country. The leaders agreed to convene a high-level revitalization forum of the parties to the peace agreement to include estranged groups to discuss concrete measures. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makui says today's gathering in Juba is a follow-up to the Addis Ababa IGAD summit.
The purpose of this meeting is to follow up from the last IGAD Heads of State and Government meeting, in which they decided to set up a revitalization forum. And in the revitalization forum, they have come up with a metrics or an agenda for the revitalization process. And this is a follow-up. So this is actually a follow-up from that.
They have asked your government, was that last month, to return to fully implementing the 2015 agreement.
What do you mean by return to the implementation of the 2015 agreement?
Because I think the understanding is that the agreement is not being fully implemented.
That is your opinion. It is unfortunate that you are giving a wrong judgment. The agreement is there, it is being implemented, and what is meant here is only to correct the metrics in terms of areas where the agreement lagged behind. But it does not mean that the agreement is not there. Otherwise, you cannot talk of revitalization, or you cannot talk of rejuvenation, and so forth. Because if it is not there, then what are you doing? The agreement is there, it is being implemented, and it is in process.
Riek Machar, who signed the agreement.
After all, who is Riek Machar? My Riek Machar is a South Sudanese who has decided to rebel, and he went there alone. The other faction, they are divided into two. There is this part, which was the chief negotiator, is here with us. And Riek Machar has gone. This doesn't mean that Riek Machar, when he signed the agreement, he did not own the agreement. It is not his. And as such, if he has decided to abandon that agreement, others will be there to implement it. And this is what is happening. So this idea of saying agreement without Machar is a non-starter is unbecoming. It is not correct and must be corrected.
Minister, I think I might have read that your government has now decided to welcome the deployment of this regional protection force. Is that true?
We accepted their coming since last year. And the fact that they were delayed up to this moment was not our concern. So they are free to come in at any time.
Michael Makui, South Sudan's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Amnesty International says thousands of South Sudanese women and girls, and in some respect, some men, are battling mental distress and stigma with nowhere to turn for help after being raped. In a new report entitled Do Not Remain Silent, Survivors of Sexual Violence in South Sudan Call for Justice and Reparations, released on Sunday night, Amnesty says the aggravated acts of sexual violence against thousands of people across South Sudan have been going on since the start of the December 2013 conflict.
The report details sexual violence against men, women, and girls. We spoke to about 168 victims of sexual violence, 16 of whom were men. And what this report details is just the prevalence and how consistent a feature sexual violence has been since the conflict broke out. Sexual violence is quite rampant. It has been taking place every time civilians have gotten into close proximity with armed actors. This has been committed by both opposition fighters and government fighters and all their various militias. And this is detailing violations that took place all the way from December 2013 to the present day.
You said the perpetrators come from both sides of the conflict. Are you suggesting these acts are being carried out by both government and rebel forces?
Yes. So this details violations, like I said, all the way from December 2013, in which armed actors from both sides, from the government forces and from the opposition forces and the allied militia, conducted sexual violence against women, girls, and even some men. So these acts, you know, have occurred alongside attacks in villages. So for instance, when government forces attack villages in opposition areas, they also conduct sexual violence in those areas. And also remember that these acts are not happening in isolation. So sexual violence has been occurring alongside other violations of human rights, including killings, including lootings and destruction of civilian property, including torture, a denial of freedom of movement. This has been ongoing, but also we've seen the ambit of other violations that have been carried out in the conflict.
I was not quite sure, but I read that you said thousands of South Sudanese women and girls and some men. Are you saying there also sexual violence against men?
Yes. For this report, we spoke to 16 men who were subjected to sexual violence. Some of them were raped. Most of them were raped when they were in detention under government forces. So, for instance, under detention by the National Security Service. And some other men were castrated when government forces attacked their villages. For instance, one man that we have interviewed for this report, he was a blind man. And so when government forces attacked his village in 2015 in Unity State, he could not run, you know, along with the other villagers. And so he remained, and the government soldiers gave him a choice. And he chose to be raped, and the government soldiers raped him instead of killing him. Yes, you will also recall, so cases of sexual violence against men, especially in South Sudanese society, there's so much stigma. So there isn't that much knowledge or publicity around sexual violence against men.
Nyango Atot is Amnesty International's campaigner for South Sudan. She was speaking with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. South Sudan's Minister of Information says a report by Amnesty International on sexual violence in South Sudan is not worth the paper on which it is written. Michael McQuee says such a report is written by people who reside in Juba hotels.
In the first place, such reports are not new. They are not strange. And all that I want to know from you is, when did these atrocities committed? Listen to me. These are reports which are usually orchestrated in the hotels of Juba, and they are sent without being substantiated, and they are taken for granted that these are true reports. These are people who are sucking, eating money against the blood of the people of South Sudan. These are not genuine reports. These are cuts and paste which have been appearing all this time. Unless they come up with a very clear report that in this day this happened, in this day this happened, it is very unfortunate to write in generality. Such reports are actually not meant for anything other than for tarnishing the image of the people and the government of South Sudan. These are not honest reports, and these people do not deserve even to be there to be writing reports for us.
Michael McQuee is South Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Campaigning for Angola's August 23rd presidential election began yesterday, Sunday. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaivez says both the ruling MPLA party and the main opposition Unity Party, UNITA Party, are telling voters how to vote.
The ruling party MPLA issued a statement saying that the party wants, and I quote, a qualified victory in the next general election of 23rd of August. In the statement published this Sunday, the current ruling party called for all the militants and supporters to go massively to polls in a way to assure the victory of the ruling party, because it's the first time in these fourth general elections when the MPLA will compete without the current leader, President José Eduardo dos Santos, amongst increasing rumors of the worsening of the president's health. Meanwhile, the MPLA also underlining its main slogan, which are saying correct what is wrong, improving what is good.
It seems to me that the opposition seems to be emboldened or encouraged to participate in this particular election. Why do you think they are so enthusiastic, the opposition, to be in this fight?
I think the hope of the opposition is the very first time when the current President dos Santos will not compete. As you know, President José Eduardo dos Santos has been in power for decades, and the opposition seems to believe that this kind of change, because the current candidate of the ruling party, General John Lourenço, is not too well now, means some kind of chance to challenge the government party. On the other side, the country is in a huge economic crisis, and there is a lot of miscontentment from the voters and from the population in general.
Mario, I was reading a story the other day that the Angolan parliament has passed a new law that will limit the powers of the next president in matters of, say, security and defense. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It was passed last Friday, and it's a very controversial law. It was passed with the voters of the MPLA, the ruling party, which have the majority at the National Assembly, and the voters against from the opposition parties. But the matter of the question is that this law just limits the powers of the next president. He will not be allowed to change the nominations of the commanders from defense and the army staff chief, the intelligence aide, and the president, which will be in power, according to the Constitution, has the power to appoint the army staff chief, the national police commander, and the intelligence head of staff. So it seems it will be a huge controversial in the next National Assembly.
Mario Alpava is a veteran Angolan journalist. He was speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington, and today is Monday, July 24th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. A group of Nigerian governors who visited ailing President Muhammadu Buhari in London say they found the president to be in cheerful mood and that he has not lost a bit of his sense of humor. Femi Adesina is special advisor to President Buhari.
Well, the statement is clear. Some governors from Nigeria, as well as the national chairman of the All Progressive Congress, were in London, and they met and had lunch with the president. And they reported back that he was in good health and just waiting for an all clear from his doctors before he came in.
So, and they said that the president is in good health. The question is, why didn't the governor themselves give a news conference on this matter?
The governor, one of them spoke with me. I'm the spokesman to the president. So he knows that when he speaks with me, I can disseminate it. And you have heard about it. That shows that it has gone very far.
And so they are saying that, according to your release, that the rumors of the president's health is all lies. Is that correct?
It's in public domain that the president had been indisposed. But we know that some people went across the board and they began to say all sorts of exaggerated things. It was that those exaggerations that were described as lies.
So did the governor say, I know the president is alert about what's happening in the country. Did they say, in fact, when he will be able to return?
That would not be in the place of the governors to say. Because right from when the president was leaving on May 7, it was stated in the statement we issued that he will return when the doctors give him an all clear. So the governors would not be able to give that all clear if the doctors who can.
I'm asking these questions because we are told that Nigerians are very interested in what's in this release that has been put out.
Naturally, they should be, because that's their president. And if the president they love, they are interested in his welfare and his well-being. So they should be interested.
Femi Adesina is the special advisor and special advisor on media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. You are speaking with me from Abuja. This Wednesday, July 26, Liberia will commemorate 170 years of independence. But over the weekend, Liberians in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area had an advanced Independence Day celebration on the compound of the Liberian embassy. I spoke with a number of them. Gabriel, thank you very much again, and let me say happy July 26th to you.
Happy July 26th to you, James, and to all Liberians wherever you are in various parts of the world.
Now, how is the government and the embassy celebrating the day?
First of all, we give thanks to God Almighty, through whose grace Liberia came into existence as Africa's first independent republic in 1847. We look forward to a more prosperous future, especially during this critical part of our existence as we, you know, hold elections this year for the ushering in of a new administration. Nearly more than 50 years of sustainable peace and progress is something for which we're very grateful.
Thank you, Gabriel. Nice to talk with you.
It's always my pleasure, James, and thank you for all you do.
Your name, please.
Konri Zoll, the chairperson of LCA DMV 2017 Independence Celebration.
Now, what's your take on the celebration of July 26th today?
The 26th is always awesome, especially today because it rained. Some people are complaining, but the rest of us are praising God because we know when rain comes, there's shower of blessings. So we are excited to be here. As you notice, the people are packing, unpacking their food. They're bringing back their clothes, and we are excited. Music's going to get on. This is a celebration. No one's going to stop. 170 years. This is live, LIB live all the way. We're not stopping.
I know the excitement this year is the elections in Liberia. Are you following what's happening?
Of course. All of Liberians follow what happened. It doesn't matter if we are Liberians in the diaspora. We have to follow this, our country. We're passionate. But one thing that has us all together, we are united.
So nice to talk with you, and happy 26th.
Thank you. Happy 26th. My 26th on y'all.
Thank you.
My name is Richard Janga Jr., and I live in Alexandria, Virginia. I do appreciate the fact that every one of us Liberians can gather at the Liberian Embassy in the Washington, D.C. Yeah, but it's like, I have a question in mind. We are celebrating 170th independence, but what are we celebrating? Are we celebrating poverty? Because many countries around Africa celebrate independence based on our progress or level of development. But what are we Liberians celebrating? That's my question. What are we celebrating? That's the thing we Liberians are thinking about. And comes October of this year, it's binding onto every Liberian to make some decision who we're going to vote as president. Because the future of Liberia lies in our hands. So be careful on whom we're going to elect as our next president.
Thank you very much, and happy 26th.
Wish you the same, sir.
Let me say, my friend, happy 26th to you. Happy July 26th to you.
Happy July 26th to you as well.
Thank you. What does this day mean to you?
I guess it's a day of celebration, but also a day of reflection, because you want to look at what the past is, from where it has brought us and where it's taking us. And I guess planning for the future is what our priority should be.
Now, as you reflect on July 26th, what's on your mind the most? I know you're an educator.
Yes, education is always on my mind, and that's, I believe, is the most important area that we must focus on, especially with early childhood, young children getting the foundation that's important for them to be successful later on in school and in life. Make sure that our children understand and know their history and also become successful and are confident in themselves and their ability to be good citizens in the society.
Shirley, so nice to talk with you, and happy July 26th to you.
Same to you.
Jerry, happy July 26th to you, and welcome here to the compounds of the Liberian Embassy. What's on your mind on this day as we celebrate 170 years of Liberia's independence?
We thank God there's no war, but there is misery, there is sadness, the unemployment is around 85%, so a lot of people don't have anything to celebrate for except that there's no more fighting.
There's excitement this year because of the election. Any comment?
Oh, Lord. I am shocked about the decision of the Supreme Court.
The views of some of the Liberians who gathered this past weekend to commemorate their country's 170th Independence Day anniversary. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the results of the second leg of matches in the 2018 CAF African Championships qualifiers played across various venues this past weekend on the continent. Ethiopia were granted a 3-0 scoreline on Sunday when Djibouti withdrew their participation. The encounter was set to be staged at the Hawassa Stadium in Ethiopia on Sunday, but the visiting side withdrew ahead of the second leg. Elsewhere, a brace from Gerardo spearheaded Angola into the next round of the 2018 African Nations Championship after the Palancas Negras booked their place following their 3-2 win and 4-2 win on aggregate over Mauritius at the Estadio 11 de Novembro in South Africa. A first-half strike by Ryan Moon ensured the Bafana side maintained their dominance over Botswana as they came tops in their second leg on Saturday at the Moeleng Stadium in Rustenburg. In other results, Uganda defeated South Sudan 5-1, Rwanda and Tanzania played a scoreless draw, while Senegal defeated Sierra Leone 3-1. Guinea-Conakry defeated Guinea-Bissau 7-0, while Benin Republic and Togo settled for a 1-1 draw. Football Kenya Federation President Nick Mudawa says the local organizing committee will put all the stops to ensure Kenya hosts the CHAN 2018 tournament. A CAF delegation is expected to visit the country late August for a final inspection of the venues during which Kenya's fate will be decided. In basketball news, Mali claimed the first ever FIBA Under-16 African Championship title after beating Egypt 76-65 in Saturday's final in the Mauritius city of Vokas Phoenix. Earlier in the day, Algeria claimed the last spot on the podium after knocking off Tunisia 57-54 in the third place game. Staying with basketball, Tunisia on Sunday beat Romania 79-71 in Cluj, Romania at a second friendly match ahead of the AfroBasket Championship for 2017. Tunisia on Friday conceded defeat at a first friendly 56-67. The AfroBasket will be hosted by Tunisia and Senegal on September the 8th to the 16th, where Tunisia are drawn in Group C with Cameroon, Rwanda and Guinea. In rugby news, the Kenya National 15s team continued their unbeaten run in the 2017 African Rugby Gold Cup after registering a resounding 41-22 victory over their host Zimbabwe in a match played at the Hartsfield Rugby Ground in Bulawayo on Saturday. The win means Kenya are one step away from reclaiming the continental title the last won in 2013, and that will be achieved if they pick a win over defending champions Namibia on July the 27th in Windhoek. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, July 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you have a productive week. VOA.
You are right. audience on VOA's FM in Accra, Ghana. We are happy to announce that VOA's FM station 98.1 is back on the air with all your favorite news and programs. Tune in every day 24/7. You can also listen to VOA's radio programs on our shortwaves, 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are online at voanews.com.